Hey, what's up, guys? Welcome back to Think Big Bodybuilding Media here on YouTube. Advices Radio, if you're listening on audio. Thank you, everyone, for liking and subscribing and following along with everything that we are doing. Today's program comes to us under very unfortunate circumstances. This program will be dedicated to a bodybuilder that we recently lost, and that's IFBB Pro Daniel Alexander. Daniel was getting ready for Legion Sports Fest. He was going to compete in the 212 division. He sat down and recorded this podcast with us, and then, unfortunately, a couple days later, he shockingly passed away. He had turned pro 2017 as a middleweight, and he had climbed his way up to about 200 pounds now, and he looked fantastic. He was going to be a threat at this show, I believe. I know that his coach Dave was really proud of him. I know that we were all looking forward, including him. I could tell, you know, he was freaking pumped. You know what it's like being just a couple weeks out and being excited to see all of your hard work come together. From what we understand, it looks like this was a heart issue. I can't really comment on the specifics, but there's a really good chance that this had some genetic underlying causes. Could bodybuilding have pushed that further through the stress of dieting and cardio and prep and work? I don't know. We don't know yet. But what we do know is that we lost a fantastic human being who was doing a lot for the sport of bodybuilding. So there's not much more I can say about this other than I didn't plan on putting this show out. Then his parents reached out. They said they'd like to see the footage. And after that, they asked if we would still please put the program out. And so we are doing that today. And I just want to send a message out to his family and his friends that I am really sorry for your loss. I hope you guys enjoy this program. There's some good bodybuilding stuff in here. Every time we get Dave Kalik on, it's always a good show. Guys, beyond the bodybuilding stuff, I mean, the way I'm seeing this, I'm looking for a lesson. And I keep coming back to the fact that we don't know when our time will be, and all we have is now. And so I challenge you today to live your fullest life, do something new, do something different, do the things that you want to do, because this is our only opportunity. My heart and my thoughts go out to Daniel. Go out to his family, go out to his friends, and anybody who had the pleasure of knowing him. All right, guys, let's get to this show, and a lot more to come from Think Big and Advices. Hey, what's up, guys? Welcome back to Advices Radio and Think Big Bodybuilding Media on YouTube. Today, of course, we've got back with us Coach Dave Kalik, and he's brought with us IFBB Pro Daniel Alexander. What is up, gentlemen? Daniel, nice to meet you, brother. How are you doing today?
I'm doing good, man. Nice to meet you. How's everything?
Everything is good. So, you know, I've been looking at your stuff. Of course, I've been following along with all the posts that Dave has made. And just to take us back, now you turned pro at USA's as a middleweight 2017, correct?
Yeah.
All right. And what did you weigh at that time on stage?
What did we end up weighing? Like 75.8? Like, it was actually pretty close.
Like, on the dot of like 75.8, like that weigh-ins.
Right on. And now you are getting ready currently for Legions, which is going to be, how far out are we now, Dave?
4 calendar weeks from today.
28 days exactly.
All right. So 4 weeks out. Daniel's on a keto day from what I gathered before we started recording here. And what are you weighing today, brother?
This morning before cardio, I weighed 200.8.
Well, yeah. So that's a decent amount of muscle that you've put on. And that's really a lot of what I wanted to talk to you guys about today. You know, a lot of our listeners out here, viewers are, you know, everybody's trying to gain as much muscle as they can, be the best they can, bring their best physique. And Dave, you guys have done one hell of a job. So I want to say, you know, congratulations to both of you already. I mean, for that's a freaking ton of mass. Where do you figure he's going to come in on stage, Dave, this year?
Honestly, like, his weight fluctuates up and down. So, like, I mean, pretty much we have literally maybe a pound, like maybe a pound to lose at this point. You know, the idea is to be ready early. You know, the weight fluctuates, fluid loading, blah, blah, blah. When all said and done, he'll probably wind up going on stage. I would imagine probably like, I would say 197 on the dot. And that's probably going to be pretty accurate. And what's kind of cool is that, again, you know, you won middles, it's 175. He did leaders last year, 188. And he's definitely on schedule to be 198 up there. And more tissue everywhere, literally.
Oh, yeah. What have you guys been doing, Daniel? Tell me about what do you think in your mind, first of all, has been the number one factor here in being able to put on the amount of muscle that you have?
Well, if we go back to after I turned pro, I went right from that show. We started prepping for the first show. And I don't know if Dave told you or not, but I do cheerleading outside of this too. So I do a lot of tumbling and flipping, and I compete doing that. So I've always had to keep my weight kind of in check. So that way, if I get with what else I do, I can't be too heavy. So I've only been able to put on a little bit of weight every year. But this last year, I was put in a situation where I didn't have to do as much. So I got to actually grow a little more and put on a little more size. And working where I work, I'm literally up and moving for 12, 13 hours so I can get a lot more meals. And I was doing maybe 7 meals a day in the off season.
And so when you say working where you work, you're at Crunch. You're one of the head trainers at what location yet?
The Northridge location.
Okay, right. I mean, and dude, I had no idea you did cheerleading. You know, Mike Liberatore, he used to be a cheerleader too.
That's right.
Yeah, he did. Huh. I forgot about that.
You forgot about that shit. That's right.
I think you guys are the only two cheerleaders that I know of that have crossed the bodybuilding. Man, how have you? Tell me about that, because this is something I didn't know anything about. When did you get into cheerleading?
I lost a bet when I was like 22.
You're kidding me.
That sucks.
Yeah, I had to go to practice with a friend. I did a little bit in high school, but like just kind of like most football players do, like their end of the year, they just kind of dick around to hang out with the girls. But later I lost a bet with a friend. I had to go to his practice at the community college and ended up liking it. So then I just stuck with it for a little bit. And here I am 8 years later, still doing it.
No kidding. Now, as you've grown muscle, have you found that is it any more difficult to be like as agile as you need to?
Oh, hell yeah. Really? I don't flip nearly as good as I used to. Yeah, no, there's no way.
No kidding. So Dave, tell me, how does that affect his bodybuilding? Because it sounds like he's a really active dude between cheerleading, being a trainer, working
honestly,
all day.
It's pretty, like, you got to see, if you see like his, if you go to his page, some of like, he's like tossing his curls up on his, twirling them on his pinkies and shit. I respect the professionalism. It hasn't really gotten in the way of, you know, I mean, I'm sure that the added sizes has gotten, you know, the other way around. It's gotten in the way of what he's doing mechanically with cheerleading, but the bodybuilding, I mean, if anything, Jesus Christ, I think it's made his interior and medial belts even crazier, you know? Very deliberate moving, you know, you're pushing people up over your head and all that. And, you know, it hasn't affected the bodybuilding at all. You know, I think the biggest thing has been, you know, the increase of calories. If we're going back to the size that's been put on since last year. Had a really good offseason, went right into it. I mean, actually, we did utilize, I think, the size gains, like we did utilize some good momentum with rebounds like after each of these shows. And again, you know, we're talking about someone who's a genetic freak. You know, when he was middleweights, you know, like the first year he got fifth, making weight wasn't a problem. The second year he got third, more challenging for sure, you know. And then the last year when he won, it was a motherfucker getting down. My breath every day and all that. Yeah, that was tough. I'm not gonna lie. That was brutal. But you know, I think that left him in a situation where he was able to be very sensitive for a really good rebound. You know, then we get into the 212 class, and again, there's no weight restriction. But yet, again, for him, he's unique in a couple of ways. So he gets very sensitive when he's very lean, and so during the prep, he grows. So he puts on more. Most of the muscle I think Daniel puts on is actually in prep. He's one of these guys that respond like where, you know, certain people have different sensitivity, you know, and some people have to be very lean to have that IGF acknowledgement to muscle cells where their sensitivity, where the, you know, higher levels of glucose, all this, everything is like stimulating growth, you know, where some people, they thrive on being like, you know, huge caloric surplus, getting a little bit, you know, putting on 5 pounds of fat to put on 12 pounds. You know, he's not like that. He's actually the opposite, where he just adds tissue as he gets leaner. So it's funny because, you know, as the time goes on, he's getting leaner and leaner. But the last, correct me if I'm wrong, Daniel, but the last 6 weeks, there really hasn't been any real loss, last 5 weeks, any real loss truly on the scale. Hmm. It's just that his body, he gets leaner. I mean, a pound of lead weighs the same as a pound of feathers. So, I mean, he loses a pound of fat and retains a pound of muscle. It doesn't say the same, but it gets leaner and harder, leaner and harder. So, shit, man, this prep has been, because of that, it's just been off the fall. Pretty great prep, actually. I mean,
so many good things. A lot of it's how I eat in the off season too. I eat 6-7 meals, but they're not, you know, they're not chicken and rice meals like most bodybuilders. I'll have like 2 granola bars or an egg McMuffin. That's a meal for me. And then when I started prep this year, I weighed 214 the first day we started the new diet. And right now I'm at 200, but I'm down, you know, 10% body fat.
Damn. That's crazy, man. So realistically then it sounds like if you're only eating a couple of granola bars, you know, in your off season for a meal at this point, then I take it like, I mean, first of all, let me ask you, how far out do you start dieting for a show?
This year we started what, 18 weeks, 16 weeks?
Yeah, just earlier because for many reasons. I mean, his metabolism's so fast. And here's a situation where, because when he gets into like a more of a caloric deficit, you know, it seems like he thrives in response to that.
Yeah.
And then as the calories progressively, like, you know, come up, then he just seems to respond and it just grows, you know? I mean, at this point, you know, we do have, you know, some keto days, gluconeogenic days, you know, some carb-free ones. But for the most part, for this prep, I mean, his calories have been, they're way higher compared to last year. I mean, he's got a lot more muscle on him, so the calories are, you know, appropriately placed in lieu of that.
Yeah. Let me ask you something, Dave. If he were to eat like that year round, I mean, what do you think? Do you think that he would be even bigger then? If he were to be able to...
No, I think he'd go crazy.
Yeah? Okay.
No, I mean, like, this next season, this off-season will be a little bit different, but I mean, initially, like, you know, his appetite, what happens is his appetite gradually, like, in the beginning of prep, his appetite is not, like, you know, amazing. And then I'm not saying the meals are forced.
Yeah.
But it takes a little bit for the wheels to get churning. And then all of a sudden he gets hungry between meals, you know? And then
they're
all of a
forced. Sudden, you know, I'm forcing a lot of those meals in the beginning.
No kidding.
Yeah. So getting, like, ironically, I think the toughest part for him is the first couple weeks of prep, just getting in that that mode, you know, because it's actually, you know, he's eating more. There might be some more calories in the off season, but he's eating more volume of food, you know, in the pre-contest phase. And that takes some getting used to. But it's like, you know, my analogy of you build up a fire with kindling and then, you know, there's a good flame going and then you put these big logs on and the flame diminishes. But once those logs catch fire, you know, my stupid analogy. But anyway, once he gets going, his metabolism gets going and things start picking up and then he's hungry for the next meal. And then lo and behold, he'll be starving for the next meal and then he becomes grumpy. Then I know when he's grumpy, we're getting there. So,
right, I'm getting grumpy. So it's a keto day. A little grumpy.
What does the day look like for you today on keto? Like, what are we talking exactly?
Oh, let him rip it out. Tell them what we're doing today.
Breakfast was 4 fish and 3 whole eggs. And then I did 4 fish, 4 beef. And then I have 8 chicken. And then at 4 o'clock, I'll do another 4 fish, 4 beef. And then I'll do another 8 ounces of chicken. And then dinner is egg whites and fish.
So Dave likes to mix those proteins together. How do you feel you've responded doing that? Because I know that's something we've talked about a bunch of times. It's not just 8 ounces of chicken. It's not just 8 ounces of steak. You're saying you're doing like 4 and 4 in some of these meals.
It makes a big difference on how everything digests. You can feel a difference. You feel your metabolism get warmer. You feel your body get warmer. Mixing the proteins definitely makes a difference in how your body is reacting to everything.
Right on. Now, so are you guys now, I know Dave, you work with Stan Physique Inc. Are you guys all working as a team together or are you just working one-on-one with Daniel?
I pretty much work one-on-one. Stan has definitely helped out a great deal with his posing. Stan is literally one of the best posers, you know, ever. So, you know, I do the diet and the prep and all that. And we have Stan work on his posing at times and it's been extremely helpful.
Right on. What's your favorite part of doing all this, Daniel?
Probably the sense of accomplishment. This is something that I wanted to do since I was 13, 14, pretty classic bodybuilder story. I can tell you the magazine that I saw when I decided I want to look like that. And just making it happen finally. You know, I took a little break to finish college, and there was a couple of years where I didn't really get to compete or work out like I wanted to, and then I just hopped right back into it.
Right on. And how old are you now?
I turned 30 this year.
Right on. It's a good age. Dave, this is like the age where guys really start maturing, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, between 30 and 38 is where I think the real meat and potatoes happen. And then, of course, it's kind of cool because I think I see a lot of changes in physiques, obviously, from 30 to 38. But then, like, there's also, like, you know, we can go up and talk about it another time. Between 38 and 40, there's just different levels of change, you know, different levels of maturity, muscle maturity, whatever. But I think for next year, you'll see Daniel probably for the first time. It'll be a struggle making the 212 class, not unlike it was a struggle making the middleweight class. And I'm sure that's what's going to happen next year, just at the rate he's growing. I mean, honestly, even now, like, if he wanted to, like, he could, you know, we want the muscle to look, you know, quote unquote, set in and clean, you know, get to push more and more, you know, but I just wanted to make sure, like, you know, the waistline stays intact. You know, we're trying to keep the integrity of what got him here in the first place.
Yeah.
And so ironically, we're not rushing it, even though he's putting on muscle like drastically every year. We're not trying to rush it. And I feel that, again, he keeps his whistles and bells, you know, the midsection and the, you know, the vacuum. There's so many things that we want to keep as him, you know, and therefore, like, we're not trying to, like, you know, rush it, although we could have. So I think for next year, though, you'll see, you know, I think probably going to be like how it was with the USA, how it was a troublemaking in the middleweights. I can see that happening.
let me ask you this, guys. So, you know, you mentioned some things that I think are reminiscent of what we look for in classic bodybuilding, you know, tiny waist, guys that are able to pull vacuums. You got the round sweeping quads, beautiful shapes. How far off are you from being able to train or compete in the classic division? Would that even potentially be an interest or an option?
Use this is that
when I turn 50, maybe.
Why is
I
that
can't squat anymore?
Yeah, why is that now? Why is your thought on that?
Well, I mean, I guess I can be pretty open and candid. All those guys doing classic, they should go to 212s. I don't know what they're afraid of. It's pretty simple.
You feel like so? What is it? What's the difference in your mind?
Like, I mean, sorry to cut off, but I mean,
yeah.
You look at like, I mean. We're talking about there's some freaky body parts, like, you know, he's got freaky 212 muscle, but with like a classic dimension, you know, which I think is what makes it dangerous. I think the reason why we're doing the 212 is because, you know, I mean, he's got some of the best legs in the IFBB, open or 212, his back, everything, all these body parts are just getting freaky, yet he retains that classic lines. And I think, again, that's what makes him dangerous as in the 212.
And it sounds like, Daniel, you just have an interest in still putting on as much muscle as you possibly can. You don't want to limit yourself.
Yeah, because with my height, my weight limit, I wouldn't make weight right now.
Oh, okay.
And I still have a lot more size to put on me. So when I look at that, I look at the guys in that division who are limiting themselves, because I've put on in the last 2 years, I've put on about 20 pounds of tissue. And I still have a 29-inch waist. Right now, if I measured it when I vacuum in, we're at 29. So I put on an inch in 2 years with 20 pounds. It's doable, but nobody wants to put in the work to do it correctly. Nobody wants to take the time to do it. So that division to me seems like the easy out for a lot of the middleweights and lightweights who just don't want to, you know, take their time.
Right on. Is that something that you've had to do any kind of special work with on your waist, or is it something that has just retained itself?
A little bit of both. It's retained itself, but it's also something that I'm aware of. You have to be cognizant of how much stuff you're putting into your system, how much you're eating, and monitor all that. You can't, like, I eat a lot and I eat junk food all the time, but it's in small portions. It's not anything crazy.
Okay. So part of that is that you're not distending it out. You're not pushing it out.
Oh no. I got to walk around looking great all day. That's my job. Got to suck it in.
So do you practice vacuums, do a lot of core training? What's your philosophies around your core?
I actually hate training abs, but I think a lot of it is the cheerleading, the tumbling and gymnastics and stuff. I think a lot of it naturally comes from that. It's a lot of indirect core, so I'm doing that stuff all the time. Plus, you know, you don't want to walk around with your gut hanging out, so I'm always flexing it to make sure it looks good in my shirts.
That's a good point, man.
Yeah. And also, like, I mean, gear-wise, keep in mind, like, again, going back to wanting to keep the waist, you know, we're not pushing, like, tons and high crazy doses of androgens where he's getting that visceral buildup.
Yeah.
You know, where there's no, like, crazy insulin protocols and I'm cramming in tons of intra and post, you know, we're not doing that inflammation blow-up shit,
yeah.
You know, for all the above reasons.
Dave, do you feel like guys that do get that distension, that inflammation, is that something that can be reversed, or do you feel like once you got it, you're stuck with it?
Well, insulin insensitivity is a motherfucker, you know. I mean, it can be reversed, but again, like, you know, a lot of times when you see a lot of these guys where they lose the subcutaneous fat, but that visceral fat is not there, so you see like surface vascularity, but you don't see the deep separation on stage, and you see, you know, the midsection that's blown out. I mean, it can be reversed over time, but I mean, again, it's like you, again, I think when these guys be doing like tons and tons of androgens, and you are having trouble like with your glucose tolerance levels, because there's tons of insulin being used and all this, then I think that you get that stubborn visceral fat that's, you know, the midsection mostly. And, you know, you can see it like where that's in the stomach's hard to control. And there's inflammation, and it can be reversed over time. But I mean, it's, you know, I mean, I'm not saying you can't unring a bell, but I mean, there's some guys who have literally, like, you know, pushed out their obliques, whatever.
Yeah.
And you can bring down those levels, but, like, you know, those obliques have to eventually, they have to atrophy, and then you have to make sure that you are very visceral fat wise. You've dieted it off, you know, and it's going to be more stubborn and more difficult, but it can be worked on. It can be reversed.
How does training play a role in keeping his waist tight?
Well, I mean, he mechanically trains really, really well. I mean, when he squats, he's not doing like, he's not squatting from his, but like he's not powerlifting. I mean, he's done powerlifting, but he's not these movements. He's, you know, he's not lifting like a powerlifter. That makes sense. So he's not like, you know, like a lot of powerlifters, let's say they'll come down and they'll squat off of the extended belly. Like he's not blowing out his transverse abdominals and obliques. He's taking them out of the movement, and he's, how do I say it? He's squatting or deadlifting, whatever, mechanically correct, where he's not, you know, using, you know, secondary muscles to assist and blowing the whole thing out. If you want to call it, he's doing bodybuilding squats or bodybuilding deadlifts, so be it.
Yeah.
But the form of technique is mechanically correct, where he's A, trying to avoid injury, because he's Daniel Train's very smart, and B, he's not trying to, again, involve those transverse abdominals, obliques in these movements, you know, and so I think he's getting great development because his form is really, really good. He's not bouncing and snapping and, you know, he gets great control over the muscle when he trains. There's a great control negative when he trains. He's explosive without locking out and stuff. And I mean, except for some bicep tendonitis and stuff, he's been remarkably pretty much injury free. We're trying to keep it that way. I mean, we talked about, he's got some old football injuries that are linger here and there and some gymnastic stuff. But I mean, for the most part, he trains smart, and I think that he does progressive stress loads on his muscles, and they react, and not like, again, the midsection and all that stuff. And he's not training all inflamed. Like all these guys, when they're like filled up with tons of carbs and intramuscular insulin, whatever, intra-workout insulin, and you're trying to do these movements, then I think you get more blown out in the midsection and all that. And that's not happening here.
Okay. Legs have always been something that's been, it's been a standout body part as far as I've seen from you, Daniel. Is that always been a strong group for you, or is that something that you've had to put a lot of work to get them where they are today?
Both. I mean, when I first started working out, I was little. I weighed about 98 pounds first time I worked out.
All right.
So very little kid. So I had to put in the work, but as far as like bodybuilding, I haven't, because the legs are already developed. When I was playing football, we did squats 3 times a week. That was just our team's protocol. So for 4 years in high school and a year in college, I squatted 3 times a week, and it wasn't baby squats. It was ego lifting, shit talking, the boys yelling at you, ass to grass squats. So I developed really big legs. They've actually shrunk. Shit, they're like 30 inch legs now. They used to be 33, 34
no kidding.
When I first started training. And they've shrunk because I've just trained them once a week or once a month. And they've started to match the rest of my body. But so I put in a lot of work early in my career to have the legs to answer the question. But now I just kind of maintain them.
What advice would you give to the guys out there that are trying to grow their legs? Because it is a stubborn body part for so many people.
If it's, I guess it would depend on their age. If they're younger and their joints can handle it, you need a squat. You I know it's a bad lift. I know there's a lot of detrimental shit down the road. But if you want the legs, if you want the size, then you have to squat. You got to do your deep squats, go heavy. Dave will tell you, there's a couple of times he's trained me where we don't really start the workout till after I throw up. That's when my legs are warmed up. You go throw up a little bit, you get right back out there, and you finish the workout. I don't need to do that as much now, but when I first started, you better believe that was every day was drop sets from six plates. Oh, shit. Do another set of drop sets from six plates. And then you can go do your extensions. Then you go do your hamstring curls. Then you can rest a little bit. You know what I mean? There's times where I've taken a nap in between my workouts at the gym, where I'll just go lay in the corner, sleep for 20 minutes, and then go back to the leg workout because I'm tired. That's just how you train your legs.
No kidding. Anything you want to add to that, Dave?
No, I mean, you know me and about the bread and butter stuff. I mean, people will find every excuse in the world not to squat. And, like, you know what? It's like you can – I mean, I'm sorry to sound so old school, but you got to squat. I mean, you really like, you know, people try to, you know, like there's just a certain look. There's great leg machines out there. Don't get me wrong. And all these machines can play a role, but to me, it's just the bread and butter. I mean, I'm not just trying to say it just for the sake of old school, but it's like, I mean, it just does something different. There's something about, and it's even different from Smith machine squats. There's something about having to balance the bar. And just these, you know, you just involve so much more of the leg itself. I mean, there's so much more involvement with legs, glutes, and hands. It just creates the, it just, I don't know, it's the bench press for the lower body. What could I say? Right. And I just think, like, you're, I mean, 90, I don't know what the percentage would be, but, like, you can't get freaky legs and progress their growing unless you're squatting. I mean, it really, there's going to be, like, as Daniel was saying, if you're young, your joints can handle it. There's going to have to be a phase where you, like, it's going to be like, okay, for the next fucking 45 minutes, we're going to squat, where you, like, sit down, you wrap, and you use your belt. I mean, like, and you're sitting there, and it's like, you know, a set of 135, two sets of two, like, you need to be like, okay, we're going to squat for the next 45 minutes, an hour, and it's going to suck, and there's going to be nausea, and, like, you're nervous because the weight's going up, and your training partner's pushing you, but, like, that's how it should be. Like, there should be, like, the day before legs, you should be, like, nervous. You should be like, fuck, tomorrow's fucking legs. In your mind, knowing you should almost be, I'm not saying losing sleep over it, but you should almost be losing sleep over knowing that the next day you're going to go in there and it's going to be uncomfortable as fuck. But you have to be progressive with the squat. You have to either use more weight with the same amount of reps, or you have to be using more reps, you know, doing more reps with the same amount of weight. Either way, there's got to be progression on the stress load. And then lo and behold, you'll start seeing, you know, the gains in your legs. Hmm. It's going to take a long time, though.
Right on.
In addition to that, I was going to say everybody's got their injuries too, but yesterday was my leg day, my quad day, and I've had two knee surgeries. You know, my back hurts. I'm old. You know, I've been squatting a little bit, so you get your boo-boos. But yesterday my body wasn't really feeling too hot, so we ended up doing four sets of 30 with three plates. That still feels just as bad as going to five plates, six plates. So people just need to be able to adjust on the fly too. I feel like a lot of people, when they feel a little kink in their knee or their back, they just stop. They go, oh, I don't want to get hurt. I don't want to shut it down.
Yeah.
Okay. Why don't you rep it out then until you feel nauseous and lightheaded? Because that's going to tear your legs up a little bit too and not put any more pressure on your back and your knees.
Figure out a way to work around it. Yeah. Yeah. I like that.
More than one way to skin a cat.
What's your recovery like on a leg day like that, Daniel? So you get in there, you do these crazy, we'll say really heavy sets or even these higher rep sets. I'm sure you're feeling it the next day. How long until you're actually feeling like you recovered from something like that?
Off season or not off season. That does make a difference. Yeah. My leg day are a lot less violent. Like yesterday's was a lot less violent than off season. But like right now my legs are sore, but I'm not useless. It was a good one. Got a good pump. Then we posed for 30 minutes afterwards. So that was part of the leg workout, was just doing lower body posing. During the off season, when I'm actually doing a 2-hour workout, I pretty much can't sit down to take a shit without falling for 2 or 3 days.
Okay.
So it's about normal. And that's even with the high calories, and that's with resting. They fucking hurt for a little bit.
And then how much space will you have before that next leg day then?
Usually because my legs are good, I'll only squat maybe twice a month. And then the other leg day is like a leg press kind of day. So my squatting days, I take another like a week and a half off, but in that gap, I'll do a normal leg day. Okay. Just once a week.
Okay. So in that case, then, you know, we're talking about legs being one of your strengths, and you've brought everything up, you know, obviously putting on 20 pounds, that's a huge jump. What's been the hardest muscle group for you to bring up this past couple of years?
My back has been a pain in my ass.
And what have you guys done to make that grow? Cause it's obviously improved.
Yeah, man. That now it's like one of his better body parts. Yeah. He does deadlifts, he does rows. He's able to, I think now the last year or two, he's able to now mechanically use, you know, the scapula flexion and contraction as opposed to just moving, using arms and shoulders to move away from point A to point B. He's just, his technique is really improved. I think he's really like, he's, excuse the expression, mind the muscle, but you know, he's strong too. So if you're improving your form, you know, and you're placing more of a stress load, you're going to get, you know, the results. So he's picking heavy weights off the floor. He's doing heavy rows. He's doing everything mechanically that's needed. And now he's executing really good form. So again, he's uninvolving, you know, the brachialis muscle and, you know, shoulders involved with a lot of people that when they row, he's using his back more, and you can just literally see when he's doing these exercises, like he's just recruiting more back muscle. Yeah. I mean, you could just see it mechanically happening.
Are you feeling it now, Daniel? You feeling it differently than you had a couple years ago?
Yeah, more so now. I mean, when Dave and I first started working together, what has it been, 5 years now, 6 years?
Yeah.
You know, I can still hear him in the back of my mind every time I do back. Like, you need to open your scapula, you need to pull back, you need to pull back. And just like we were talking about with legs being one of my better body parts, it took years of our coaches yelling at us too to do it correct, to make sure your head's up, chest up. It's just a practice thing over time. And unfortunately, I got into this later. So I'm finally at a point now where I actually think I have kind of a back. It still has some room to grow and some improvements to make still, but this is the best it's ever looked. And every year we say that, which means every year it's getting a little bit easier for me to squeeze it, a little bit easier to contract it. We were doing back twice a week for a little bit a couple of years ago, and then we went back to doing it once a week. And I think that helped just give me more reps mentally, doing it more often, and then going to the once a week to give it more recovery time to actually get a little thicker.
Oh, that makes sense. Now, what would you say is your strongest back movements? Like, what do you really like? What have you really connected to mind muscle wise for your back training?
Actually, I got this from Seth Barassi a while ago, where he does his 100 pull-ups before every back day.
No kidding. Huh. So
every day before back, I'll do 100 pull-ups. Not straight. I wish I was that strong, but I'll do 5 sets of 20, just get my 100 pull-ups done, and then I'll start my back workout. And ever since I've been doing that, it really opens everything up. It stretches everything. It's blood moving the right direction. So then the rest of the movements, the rest of the day, just feel good. You already have blood there. You don't have to worry about getting your pump now. Your body just goes.
Okay. So let's see now. So last year at Legion, you managed to get into the top 5. Obviously, you're looking to improve on that and, you know, ideally win this show this year. What did the judges tell you last year that you needed to work on most?
Upper body thickness.
Yeah, upper body thickness, not fading throughout the show. Make sure my chest stays a little fuller from start of prejudging to end of prejudging. Bring the back up, bring the arms up. You know, make everything match the bottom pretty much.
Okay. And it sounds like that you guys have done that. Yeah. Now, is there a list to tell us like who's going in this show yet? I mean, I know we know some of the people, but I mean, how does that work?
We use Instagram. You kind of see who's doing it, but a friend of mine, Charles, is doing it, and he got his pro card the year I took third in the middleweights, and I've competed against him a couple of times. I competed. I've competed with him a couple of times in other shows when we were both amateurs. And then, so I'm excited to compete with him. He's going to be a really good competitor. There's a couple other guys that come from Romania to do this show. So we'll see who comes, because the Romania show is a week before it.
Okay. What were we going to say, Dave?
No, it's interesting. Getting back to Charles. So when Daniel got third in 2016, so Charles Curtis won the middleweights, and you know, Danny got third, but it was Derek Lunsford got second.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And the following year, so the following year, you got to realize, so Derek went up to light heavyweight, won the overall, and then Daniel won middleweights. So it's kind of like a little rematch between Daniel and Charles here. It should be interesting.
That'll be fun, man. That'll be cool.
Well, Charles was classic. Charles went to classic after he got his pro card. He actually did Legions last year as classic.
Okay.
And now he's going to do the 212.
All right. I feel like Dave, overall, you would support everybody moving up to 212, and then do you eventually see open in this guy's future?
Do you see what?
Do you eventually see open in this guy's future, or you think you'll be able to do everything you need to in 212?
I think you'll see. It's my prediction that you'll see over the next year, you'll start to see Daniel as a fixture in the 212, in the upper. I think there's a lot of good things that are going to. I don't want to jinx it, but I think...
No, of course not.
I think you're going to see some remarkable shit happening over the next few years.
Right on. You guys have any other plans besides Legion?
Yeah, the cigar.
Olympia after.
Yeah, exactly.
The Olympia. And what else did you say, Dave?
Celebration cigar / shot of Jameson and discussing, fingers crossed, Olympia prep for next year. That's that's the goal for a couple weeks from now. Yep.
Right on.
Nothing other than that.
I heard, I watched a while ago, I think it was, after you won your pro card. I remember that's what you said, you guys are going to celebrate with cigars after that. Something along those lines. So anything else we should mention here, Dave, while we got Daniel on the line?
Oh, man, I'm proud of this. He worked his ass off. I mean, this year it's been, you really couldn't ask anything more out of him, you know? I'm also, you know, he's also, like, you have to understand, while he's doing all this, you know, he's not sleeping all day. I mean, he's working his ass off at the gym. He's taking this gym and he manages it. He's got, like, a whole slew of people that are working under him. And I go there to check on him a couple times a week, and I'm seeing what he's doing. And it's pretty impressive how he's, like, literally, like, running this club. And keep in mind, this is not a normal crunch. This is the most populated crunch there is of all the crunches in the chain.
You're kidding.
It's not easy to run these clubs, and no. It's very demanding. There's a lot of different personalities you got to deal with, whatever. So, you know, it's pretty amazing that he's juggling both. I got to give him credit for that, and I think just shows what kind of, you know, work ethic he has. Pretty cool.
That's a good point. It takes a lot of dedication to be able to have the focus just to do bodybuilding and then maintain, like, real life on top of that. It definitely does say a lot. There's no question. All right. Well, I think we about covered it then. Daniel, anything else that we're missing here that we should talk about?
No, not really. I mean, I'm kind of excited. It's the first time I've ever done, like, a little podcast thing, so it's kind of cool.
Well, we're happy to have you.
No, I like this. I like being able to talk about the whole process of everything, and it's been a fun journey. And like Dave said, it's kind of cool because I pride myself a lot in actually having to work I'll use air quotes to be respectful to other people, but a real job. Yeah. I don't just train a couple clients a day and then go sleep all day. I don't have a sponsor paying for everything. And, you know, I work 14 hours a day, 6 days a week, and I run the busiest crunch in the entire U.S. So it gets annoying sometimes, but I think that's what pushes me to be better than everybody else, because a lot of people get a lot of nice little hand-me-downs from other companies. So.
That said, we'll keep winning. If you want to sponsor Daniel, reach out to him. I'm sure you'd take it. Nonetheless, you know, get a good sponsorship going.
Tell people they can get in touch with you, man.
Absolutely.
Other than that, no, I'm excited. I'm ready to see what we look like in 4 weeks, and I'm really hoping that we can do another one of these as we're prepping for the Olympia. That would be kind of the dream. I'll come in full circle.
Hell yeah. If you were to give any advice then, you know, to the guys out there that are listening and watching the show, you know, I feel like you already have. You've given some good advice about, you know, trying to continue to grow. Don't cut yourself short. But what would be a take-home message, you know, that you have an opportunity here to share with a bunch of people out there that are into bodybuilding?
The biggest thing I see that bothers me is, for lack of a better word, we'll use coach hopping. The kids coming up, even the adults coming up, y'all need to trust the process. Y'all need to trust the people who are letting you know what to do and actually just do it. A lot of people try to change protocols, change foods, change cardio, And then they get mad when they don't get the result. And it's like, well, you didn't do what you were asked. So that's my biggest thing of advice is trust the process. If you're willing to let someone do your stuff for you, you need to trust everything that they're doing for you. And it'll work every time.
Oh, yeah. So if, as Dave just mentioned a second ago, if people do want to reach out to you, if those potential sponsors want to reach out, where's the best way for people to find you? What's your Instagram and everything else?
My Instagram is IFBBPro_Dandan, and that's probably the best way to get a hold of me. That's pretty much the only social media that I use right now.
Right on. Well, I think you've got a freaking killer physique, man. The condition that you brought, we haven't even really talked about your condition, but the condition that you bring, I mean, realistically, it's fantastic. And I feel like that's what you really need to be able to have in the 212, you know, looking at like what the guys did in the Olympia this year. The guys who did the best were the guys that were the crispest, you know? And
yeah, I think Sean's incredible.
Who did?
Yeah, we're putting we'll put condition first. That's the idea.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, that said, man, we're wishing you the best of luck over here. We'll definitely all be following along. And I would love to have you on again to wrap this thing up and talk about how the show went.
Soon.
Yeah, let's make it happen. I'm down.
All right, guys, for another episode of Advices Radio and Think Big Bodybuilding Media, we've got Dave Kalick and IFBB Pro Daniel Alexander. Gentlemen, thank you very much for your time. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for having us. Appreciate it.